That invitation song was number 940, Only a Step. Well, as always, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm excited that each one of you are here. I appreciate Donald's prayer for me this evening, and I hope that, as he said, I'll be able to teach you the things that I've prepared in a way that's helpful and edifying for you. We're going to be continuing the series on 2 Corinthians. And we're going to continue tonight on a train of thought that we've been on before. Paul talks a lot about some things that he was going through with the Corinthians that they kind of had doubts about his authority and had doubts about his ability to teach them the things that they needed to be taught. And that was a lot of the time based on the teaching of false teachers in their midst. And those false teachers would place these seeds of doubt in their minds and place seeds of doubt about Paul and his abilities. And in our previous study, we talked about how these false teachers were telling the Corinthians, look, Paul's got these strong, powerful letters that he writes to you. But when he's in person, you're going to see something totally different. You're going to see this weak, unauthoritative type person. And they told them that Paul was not going to be the same person in person as he was through his letters. And he argued against that point in the previous chapter, telling them, I'm going to teach the same things and be the same person that I am in my letters when I see you. And I'm going to do the teaching that needs to be done. And so tonight we see a little bit of a continuation of that same concept of him trying to prove himself to the Corinthians. And we've studied this a little bit earlier in 2 Corinthians and also in 1 Corinthians. But in this chapter, I believe we can more thoroughly see Paul's intentions behind those things and the great love that he had for the Corinthians that caused him to do this. Because a lot of the time people look at Paul trying to prove himself to the Corinthians and they say, well, Paul was being arrogant. And I hope that we can see different tonight and see his true intentions and his love for the Corinthians and his care for their souls through our study this evening. We can start to see that early in this chapter, in the first four verses. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 1 through 4, Paul expresses his concern for the Corinthians. And this kind of sets the stage for everything else that he's going to be talking about in the rest of this chapter. He says, would to God you could bear with me a little in my folly. And indeed, bear with me. For I am jealous over you with godly jealousy. For I have espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. For if he that cometh preacheth another Jesus whom ye have not preached, or if ye receive another spirit which ye have not received, or another gospel which ye have not accepted, ye might well bear with him. Paul had great concerns for the Corinthians at this time in their faith. And he saw, to some extent, it seems like a weakness in them that was just asking to fall away from their path of serving Christ and to turn away from the gospel that he had taught them. But he also saw the efforts of these false teachers to try to turn them on that path. And so we can see, starting in these first four verses, just how powerful Paul's love for the Corinthians was and his great care for their souls. He spoke of his jealousy over their souls. And we don't often think about jealousy as a good thing, but Paul had a godly jealousy for them. He cared so much for their souls, and he wanted them to be saved, and he wanted them to be preserved from these false teachers that were trying to turn them away. One thing that we see early here in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, he asks them to bear with him in some kind of folly. And we've seen Paul talk about a similar kind of concept. So he's talking about folly or foolishness in that passage. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 18 through 21, he speaks of foolishness again. He says, for the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. Now, when Paul spoke about foolishness in this passage, of course, he's not saying that the gospel is foolish. Of course, he's not saying that the teaching of the words of God is something that is foolish. But rather, he's saying people are going to see this, as foolish. The people that don't want to listen to the words of God are going to see the preaching of the gospel as something that's foolish. And he's doing a similar thing here in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 because he's talking about his efforts to prove himself to the Corinthians. And people would see those efforts as arrogant. And a lot of people today still read this epistle and say, Paul is being arrogant. He's trying to tell the Corinthians how great he is and how many great things that he's done. And so he's telling them, bear with me, this is going to sound foolish. Bear with me, these things are going to sound like I'm being arrogant. And in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 3, we can see how we could make that assumption or how the Corinthians could have had that misconception of what Paul was doing. In Proverbs 14 and 3, it says, in the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them. And as we go through this study, we'll see a little bit more clearly what we're talking about here with Paul's proof of himself to the Corinthians. But we'll see later on him over and over telling the Corinthians, I'm not behind other apostles. I'm not behind other teachers. I have the same inspiration from God that these other teachers have. And so that's something that could sound prideful, and that was his concern for the Corinthians. And so he tells them, bear with me in this folly that's going to look like me being foolish and being proud. But that's, of course, not what it was, and we'll see that also as we go throughout the rest of our study. Let's consider the concept of jealousy. Paul said that he was jealous with a godly jealousy for the Corinthians, and he was jealous over their souls. He didn't want their souls to be taken away from the fold of God. And he saw that as a distinct possibility at this point in their faith. And he saw grave danger for them to be turned away from God. In Exodus chapter 34 and verse 14, God describes himself as jealous. He says, for thou shalt worship no other God, for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God. So we see here God described as jealous. It says, God is a jealous God. And it says that because he doesn't want us to worship some other God. And that's the same thing that Paul's talking about. He's being jealous with a godly jealousy because he doesn't want the Corinthians turned away from serving God. And if they were turned away from serving God, whatever those false teachers were trying to do, whether they were trying to turn them back to Judaism or whether they were trying to turn them to Gnosticism or any kind of other belief, even if it was still centered on some kind of concept of the one true God, if it was turning away from the gospel that Paul had taught, they were going to be serving a different God in a sense. And it would have been a God that they themselves had created for themselves to serve. And so we see here God telling his chosen people, worship no other God, I am a jealous God. And Paul says, I have godly jealousy for you because I don't want to lose you. And I don't want God to lose you. And so we can start to see Paul's great care for the Corinthians coming through that caused him to say the things that he was saying. You know, there's grave danger in false teaching. And he mentioned the interaction between the devil and Eve and how the devil, through his subtlety, was able to change her mind and her heart. And Paul said, I fear that these false teachers are going to do the exact same thing to you and through their subtlety, change your mind. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15, it says, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. You know, false teachers are subtle. They're not going to just tell us that they're false teachers or tell us that they're lying. And I think we can see that more than ever in our world today, that these false teachers aren't trying to change us overnight. They're trying to push us just far enough that we start to say, hold up, I don't think I'm following you. This doesn't seem right. And then they let us settle back down. And then they push us another step further until we stop them and we say, this doesn't seem right. And then we get eased back down. We stop being watchful, and they push us another step. And before we know it, we're in a completely different place than we started in. And that's the same thing that false teachers do, and that's the same thing that they were doing in the time of Corinth. They were pushing just a little bit at a time. They were pushing in subtlety. You know, we always talk about how Satan changed one word. He said, thou shalt not surely die. Satan was subtle, and false teachers are subtle. And so Paul's telling the Corinthians, the things that they're saying may sound good, but it's not, and it's going to turn you away. And when you're those, you know, 30, 40 steps away and think, how'd we get here? Then you're going to realize what was happening. And you're going to realize that they were pushing you that little step at a time. Continuing in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 5 through 6, we've talked about how, you know, Paul had this great love and care for the Corinthians, and he was jealous over them with a godly jealousy, wanting them to remain true to God. And he had a great concern for them turning away because of false teachers. And so that all explains what he's about to say. He says, "For I suppose I was not a whit behind the very chiefest apostles, but though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge. But we have been thoroughly made manifest among you in all things." So this is a small portion of the folly that Paul was asking the Corinthians to bear with him in. He seems to be boasting here of his accolades and his standing as an apostle, and he was a chosen apostle and a chosen vessel of God. And he says, "I'm not behind the other apostles or teachers. I have the same authority that they have and the same inspiration to teach you the things that God wants you to know." And so he's telling them, please listen, because this is my standing and authority over you. And he says, "Though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge." And that's the same thing that we were talking about in the previous chapter, about him, you know, not sounding like the type of orators that people expected back then and thought had the authority. He didn't sound like those people, but he still had the truth. He says, "Yet in knowledge." Paul had the knowledge that he needed to teach the Corinthians what they needed to know. And so he begs them and asks them, please still listen. Even though I don't sound like what you're expecting, please listen to what I have to say, because it's what God has to say. And then finally, I really want to emphasize the fact that there at the end of verse 6, he says, "We've been thoroughly made manifest among you in all things." Paul wasn't telling the Corinthians anything that they didn't know. The Corinthians had met Paul. He had been with them. He had spent a great deal of time with them. He had had a profession among them. And so he wasn't just coming to the Corinthians and saying, "You need to listen to me. I have authority over you." And they didn't know him. He said they'd been thoroughly made manifest among them. The Corinthians knew everything about Paul. The Corinthians knew his authority. The Corinthians knew the knowledge that he had. And it seems like at this point, they had just forgotten, because it had been quite some time since Paul had been among them. And he talked to them about his desire to travel back to Corinth and be with them again. But it had been quite a while. And so it seems like these false teachers had, you know, they'd taken those small steps, pushed the Corinthians small steps away from the knowledge that they had once had of this manifestation that Paul speaks of here, of the Corinthians knowing everything about him and his fellow teachers. And so he's telling the Corinthians, "You know I have this authority. You know that I'm a fellow apostle, and you know that I have knowledge from God. Please listen." In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 7 through 12, Paul talks about the monetary provision for his work in Corinth. And he talks about one thing that he was trying to do to help the Corinthians to be able to listen to him, and one obstacle that he was trying to fight against. He says in verses 7 through 12, "Have I committed an offense in abasing myself that you might be exalted? Because I have preached to you the gospel of God freely. I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. And when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man. For that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. And in all things, I have kept myself from being burdensome unto you. And so will I keep myself. As the truth of Christ is in me, no man shall stop me of this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Wherefore, because I love you not, God knoweth. But what I do, that I will do, that I may cut off occasion from them which desire occasion, that wherein they glory, they may be found even as we." So Paul here speaks of his decision to not receive funds from the church at Corinth. He was receiving funds elsewhere from, he talks about whatever he was lacking, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. And he also was making some money through his own career at this point as well. And so he's talking about how he made this decision to preach the gospel of God to them freely. And he says that he robbed other churches. Of course, not meaning that he actually robbed other churches, but that he was receiving his funding from them. But I want to focus here in verse 12, where he says, or actually in verses 11 and 12, he says, "Wherefore, because I love you not?" So he asks the Corinthians a rhetorical question. Am I doing these things, and am I boasting of the things that I have done for your cause because I don't love you? Of course they knew that. They knew better than to think that Paul didn't love them. And he says, God knows the answer to this question. And the Corinthians knew the answer to this question. Of course Paul loved them, and he had proved his love to them over and over again. And then he says in verse 12, "But what I do, that I will do, that I may cut off occasion from them which desire occasion." Someone was seeking a reason or some type of leverage against Paul to prove something about Paul to the Corinthians. And this is the same type of pattern that we see from these false teachers trying to degrade Paul's name and paint an ugly picture of Paul in the minds of the Corinthians. And at this point, apparently they were trying to paint a picture of Paul being greedy. And he says here again in verse 12, "that wherein they glory, they may be found even as we." Apparently these other teachers, or whoever was trying to smear Paul's name in the eyes of the Corinthians, taught freely. They taught whatever they were teaching with no funds coming to them from the church in Corinth. And so Paul says, you know, they do this and they take great pride and glory out of that. And I'm going to be, in this sense, the same in that I'm not going to receive funds from you, because that was something that was concerning to the Corinthians. Apparently they had some doubt in their minds that Paul was just doing what he was doing for the money. And so he's trying to prove to them otherwise. And he did that by not receiving money from the church at Corinth. This is kind of a meat sacrifice to idols issue. You know, Paul talked about meat sacrifice to idols and said, you know, there's nothing wrong with me eating meat sacrifice to idols if it's sold in the market. And there's nothing wrong with me eating meat in general. But if it's going to make my brother stumble, then I'm not going to eat meat at all. And so he's kind of going through the same thing here. There's nothing wrong with me receiving funds from a congregation or even from the congregation in Corinth. But if it's going to make my brother to stumble, I'm not going to do it. And so that's the kind of the background of his decision here. Continuing in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 6, we need to understand that Paul wasn't saying that it was inappropriate for evangelists or evangelism to be funded by the church. And in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 6, he says, "Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working?" And then in verses 11 through 12, he says, "If we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ." So this issue of the Corinthians and their concerns about Paul's intentions, and maybe that he was being greedy or that he was doing the things that he was doing for the money, or whatever seed of doubt these false teachers had planted in their minds, wasn't a new thing. And it was going on when he wrote his first epistle as well. He's telling them, you know, are me and Barnabas the only ones who can't just stop having some kind of physical career? Are we the only ones that are not allowed to receive physical things for our spiritual efforts? And so the same issue persisted earlier on with the Corinthians. But again, we need to understand that Paul's not just saying to the Corinthians, you need to give me money. He's saying, I'm making the choices that I'm making for your sake. I'm making the choices that I'm making so that you're not going to stumble, so that you're not going to see me as less than I am, and you're not going to see me as greedy. In Acts chapter 18, verses 1 through 3, we see the ends that Paul was willing to go to be able to teach in Corinth. He says, "After these things, Paul departed from Athens and came to Corinth, and found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, lately come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because that Claudius had commanded all Jews to depart from Rome, and came unto them. And because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers." So here we see a part of Paul's efforts to fund his own work while he was there in Corinth, because he was talking here in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, saying, back when I was with you in person, and these brothers and sisters from Macedonia provided to some extent for my needs, but also he was working a physical career so that he could provide funds for his work. And so these are the ends that Paul was willing to go to stop his brothers and sisters in Christ from stumbling at his actions. Should we not be willing to go to the same ends? You know, we cause each other problems in so many ways, and we don't even think anything of it. We do different things that each other are looking at and saying, is that right? Is that something that we should be doing? Well, if we know that something that we're doing may cause our brother or sister in Christ to say, do they know that they're doing this? Is this a problem? Don't do it. It's that simple. You know, Paul was willing to get a physical career, or to use his physical career of building tents, and also to receive money from other congregations to do anything that he needed to do to fund his work other than take money from Corinth, because that was going to be a stumbling block for him. We should be willing to go to the same ends to not make each other stumble. We have all kinds of different things that we could do that would hurt each other. And we've got to make sure that we're mindful of each other's consciences, and that we're mindful of things that are going to cause our brothers and sisters to stumble, and that we turn away from those things as Paul did. Continuing in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 13 through 20, he begins to condemn these false teachers that the Corinthians had been listening to. He says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works. I say again, let no man think me a fool. If otherwise, yet as a fool receive me, that I may boast myself a little. That which I speak it not after the Lord, but as it were foolishly, in this confidence of boasting. Seeing that many glory after the flesh, I will glory also. For ye suffer fools gladly, seeing ye yourselves are wise. For ye suffer if a man bring you into bondage, if a man devour you, if a man take of you, if a man exalt himself, if a man smite you on the face." Paul here speaks of the false teachers in the midst of the Corinthians, and the ones who were putting all of these seeds of doubt in their minds about so many different things, but in particular, seeds of doubt about Paul himself. And he's talking to the Corinthians about the fact that these people were presenting themselves as something that they were not. He talks about them transforming themselves to look like they were servants of righteousness when in truth they were serving the devil. And so he talks about this concern, and it's the same type of idea that he was talking about earlier in the same chapter, about how the devil was able to tempt Eve and turn her away from what God had told her to do. And that's the same thing that these false teachers were doing. They were presenting themselves as servants of light and righteousness when in truth they were serving Satan. And then once again, we can see this idea of foolishness or folly coming into play. And he says, "Let no man think me a fool. If otherwise, yet as a fool receive me." He says, please don't think that I'm a fool in saying the things that I'm saying. But if you think I'm a fool, listen to me anyway. That's basically what he's saying in this passage. If you think I'm a fool for the boasting that I'm doing to try to convince you that I am who I say I am, and that I am a chosen vessel of God as he has said that I am, if you think I'm a fool for those things, sorry. I still have knowledge and truth from God, so please listen. And so he's saying, again, these things may sound foolish to you, but listen anyway, because it's for your good. I want to focus in pretty closely on verse 19. He says, "For you suffer fools gladly." And this word "suffer" is basically meaning allow in this passage, rather than some kind of physical suffering. He's talking about them allowing fools to teach them. So he's saying, the things that I'm doing may look foolish to you, but in truth, they're not. And I'm serving your purpose, I'm serving God's purpose, and I'm trying to help you. But the people you're actually listening to, they really are fools, because they're doing it for themselves. And they're doing it to try to turn you away, and they're doing it to try to turn you away from God. He says, "For you suffer or allow fools gladly, seeing ye yourselves are wise." And it seems like he's being a little bit sarcastic with the Corinthians in this passage. He says, seeing how wise you are and how much you know about who you're supposed to listen to, you're listening to fools. You think you're wise. You think that you can discern who's a fool and who's not. And you're seeing that I'm a fool, and that these people who are leading you away from God are wise. So seeing how wise you are, you've chosen to listen to fools. And these people are hurting you. These people are taking you into bondage. They're devouring you. And those are the kind of people that the Corinthians were listening to at this point. In Matthew 23, verses 27 through 28, we go back to the idea of people transforming themselves from looking like servants of unrighteousness to servants of righteousness, and the hypocrisy of false teachers. Matthew 23, 27 through 28 says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones, and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." We've talked recently about what hypocrisy really means, and it's talking about a stage actor. It's talking about somebody who's pretending to be someone that they're completely not. And the scribes and the Pharisees were often guilty of doing this very thing. They purified the external appearance of the things they were doing, and they made themselves look really good, like these whited sepulchers that are full of dead men's bones. Those whited sepulchers and these tombs that he's talking about are beautiful things, until you think about the fact that they're graves. And that's the exact thing that he's talking about with these false teachers in 2 Corinthians 11 as well, is that they're putting on a good facade and a good front. Don't let it fool you. It's not who they really are. You know, the Corinthians were listening to these people. And I want to ask you this evening, why did they listen? Why did the Corinthians listen to what these men had to say? There's a couple of possibilities to why they listened. In Matthew chapter 15 and verse 14, it says, "Let them alone, they be blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch." There are other passages that talk about this same concept of the blind leading the blind. And whenever we study these passages, it seems like we only focus on the leader. We focus on the fact that the leader is blind and that that blind leader is leading other people astray. But let's think about the follower. The follower is also blind. And if we're going to follow a blind person, we have to first be blind. You know, if you think about watching a blind person try to navigate, you know, any kind of scenario and trying to walk in one direction, they're having to feel everything, make sure that they're where they think that they are. And if I see a person walking down the street and they've got one of those sticks and they're feeling everything around them, I'm not going to say, that's the person I want to follow, because they don't know where they're headed. Instead, I'm going to be more likely to want to help that person to see where they need to be headed. But I'm not going to want to follow that person because I can see that they're blind. You only follow a blind person if you can't see that they're blind. And so whatever was happening with the Corinthians, they had been blinded. They had lost sight of what truth and reality was, and they were following these blind people that were going against the teachings of God because they themselves were blind. Why were they blind? I want to think about some of the teachings that Paul had given them in the past. You know, we see all kinds of different harsh teachings that Paul gave them through both 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. Especially in 1 Corinthians, it seems like that entire epistle is basically a rebuke of everything that the Corinthians were doing at that time. He points out their issues with sexual immorality, their issues with divisiveness. They had so many different problems that he pointed out. And you know, we don't like to have our problems pointed out. And over time, sometimes when someone's told us over and over again, you're wrong, you're doing this wrong, you need to fix this, we kind of start to shut that person out. And we stop thinking about, well, maybe they're right. We stop seeing that maybe they actually have a point and I am doing these things wrong. We get a little bit blinded. We get a little bit calloused. And maybe that's what the Corinthians were doing. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3 through 4, it says, "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables." Maybe the Corinthians had itching ears. And they had a specific message that they wanted to hear, and that's what they were seeking. You know, it says they shall heap to themselves teachers. It's not just they get to a point that they don't want to listen to the teacher that they have, and they kind of wait for some teacher to come along and hop on that bandwagon. They're looking for a teacher to teach them something. And perhaps the Corinthians wanted to think that Paul was wrong because he'd pointed out so many issues in their lives. I don't know what the reason was for the Corinthians to follow the false teachers rather than to follow Paul, but something they were saying sounded great. But they were blind leaders of the blind. The Corinthians had been blinded by their own lusts and their own thoughts, and that caused them to follow people who were blinded by their own lusts and their own thoughts. And that's what had brought the Corinthians to the point that they were in. Paul encourages them to see the fact that they're suffering or allowing fools to teach them. And to see the fact that although he may have appeared as a fool to them at times, that he was not a fool. And that he had knowledge from God. And he asks them to see, you know, if you think I'm a fool, you're listening to fools right now. So why not come back? Why not see the fact that you're listening to people that actually don't have knowledge or truth from God and come back to the truth from God? And so we request that they reevaluate their their path that they're on and the people that they're following, and consider once again following him based on the authority and the direction that he was headed. I want to conclude with 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 21 through 33. And this is the kind of the final concept of Paul's folly or his foolishness that he described of trying to prove himself to the Corinthians. And it shows us once again the ends that he was willing to go to teach the gospel to others. It says, I speak as concerning reproach, as though we had been weak, howbeit wherein soever any is bold, I speak foolishly, I am bold also. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool, I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I've been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of, by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Beside those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. Who is weak, and I am not weak? Who is offended, and I burn not? If I must needs glory, I will glory of the things which concern mine infirmities. The God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which is blessed forevermore, knoweth that I lie not. In Damascus, the governor under Aretas the king kept the city of the Damascenes with a garrison, desirous to apprehend me. And through a window in a basket was I let down by the wall and escaped his hands. What's the purpose of Paul going through all of the things that he went through in this passage? And telling the Corinthians, you know, I've been beaten. I've been stoned. I've been hungry. I've been shipwrecked. I've hurt. I've suffered. I've longed to be with people I couldn't be with. I've been harmed by false brethren. All these different things, he wasn't asking the Corinthians to pity him. He wasn't asking the Corinthians to see how great of a servant of God he was and say, you know, give glory to him. In fact, he'd asked them for the opposite. He'd asked them to stop giving him glory and give glory to God. And so in this passage, he wasn't trying to prove himself for his own glory. He was trying to prove himself so that the Corinthians would turn back to God, because that's all he cared about. You know, those false teachers that were trying to convince the Corinthians of various things and planting these seeds of doubt in the Corinthians' minds, they didn't love the Corinthians and they didn't love souls like Paul did. And I think more than anything else, this passage and Paul describing all of the things that he was willing to go for describes his love for the souls of mankind. He talked about his jealousy for souls, wanting them to remain true to God rather than turning to other teachers or other gods. And that's really what he's illustrating in this passage as well, is his fierce desire for these souls, the souls of the Corinthians that he had slaved and given his heart and soul to get them to the point that they were at of obeying the gospel and trying to serve God. He wanted their souls to be saved. We should have this same ferocity in our willingness to go to any end that it takes to have souls saved. Paul proved his love over and over again to the Corinthians, and he proved his love in this passage and in this chapter once again. He showed them how much he cared for their souls. Let's show other people how much we care about their souls. Are we willing to go to these ends for the souls of others? Are we willing to be beaten and stoned and have to escape a city in a basket hanging over the wall? Are we willing to go to those ends? Because we should be. Because souls are worth that much. You know, Paul's glorification and boasting of himself, again, was not for his own glory, but it pointed everything back to God. Does your life point everything back to God today? And are the ends that you're willing to go to for the souls of others showing how much you care? This evening, I hope that this has been an inspiring study, that we can see the example of Paul, but also see how he interacted with the Corinthians and some of the struggles that they were going through, and see how we can self-evaluate and see if we're going through some of the same struggles of following false teachers and of struggling to stay true to God, but also see the ends that God expects us to be willing to go to for the cause of the souls of mankind. So I hope this study's been helpful for you this evening. If you need any kind of spiritual assistance from the church, please come while we stand and sing.